Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
I'm just looking at the opening. Oh, what was that? It would seem like someone had hung up the phone on you.
Sorry, I got all disoriented. I didn't know it was good. Here's what it's. Did you say something into the microphone?
No. Well, here's actually after that dial tone thing. I had an experience with the internet company this week that I couldn't believe who I was talking to. Right. So the internet, it goes out like three times a day at my house. And then finally it was out for like 6 hours at a time. And I used to be thankful for this thing because they didn't have internet at all where I lived because I'm in the boonies. And then all of a sudden they show up with 6 meg internet. I'm like, this is the best. I can't believe it. We could stream stuff, you know? And now it's flighty at best. So I call them and I'm on hold legit for an hour. I mean, it's an hour and 5 minutes. Someone finally picks up the phone. And they say, what seems to be the issue? I said, one, I was on hold for an hour. And two, my internet's not working. They said, well, we're aware of a service outage in your area. And I said, well, I feel like you've had an hour to fix it. And secondly, it happens like two or three times a day. Is there anything we can do? And she said, well, we suggest that you call us when those outages happen, and then we can go ahead and troubleshoot the problem. I said, I'll be honest with you. If it goes out twice a day and it takes you an hour to answer the phone, that's 2 hours out of every day.
Yeah, that's a waste of time.
I don't have. And she goes, can we send you a new modem? I said, well, is that going to fix it? She goes, I'm not sure. I said, I feel like we're at a stalemate, man. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I'm calling you for help. If these are things that I could put two thoughts together and fix the thing, I'd have done it, you know?
I could send you new equipment. That's it.
And so we sat there. I mean, it was awkward silence for like 30 seconds. She goes, so should we send you the modem? I said, well, how much is it? She goes, well, it's free. I said, yeah, send it this way.
Send it out.
Yeah. She goes, well, you're going to have to send us the old one back. I said, well, I tell you what, I'm going to keep the one ransom. I'm going to run the new one. And if it seems to do better, then I'll send you the old one back. If it doesn't, then I'm going to keep them both. And you're going to send me another one. I'm just going to keep hoarding modems until you send a guy out with a screwdriver that does something. She said, well, I'm sorry we couldn't help you, sir. I said, you don't sound as disappointed as I am. I'll call back later.
When I have an hour.
Well, here's the deal. If you're going to run a customer's, you have got to arm your, it's not her fault, right? And I wasn't rude to her or anything, but it's not her fault that they have not armed her with any other techniques besides, can we send you a new box with lights in it? Yeah, I guess. Get it coming this way. I guess I'll plug some stuff in and see what happens. So anyway, that was it. That was my story.
I've had the opposite thing happen. So I used to, when I was checking phone calls at the company I worked for, somebody had called in and there was a problem. We didn't process something right. And so I said, okay, well, you know, I'll fix it. And then, I'll try to rectify it as best I can. Well, we get it reprocessed. And frankly, I paid to have something overnighted. It would have got to them sooner than had they not called at all. And they said, well, can you also send me a hat? And I'm like, what? For my trouble. Can you send me a hat?
They asked specifically for a hat?
Yeah. And I thought, you know, no. We're just not going to do that.
At least you're honest.
We don't have like a souvenir cabinet.
This lady wants a hat. What do I do, boss?
Here's where the awkward thing is. Companies do that. They're like, hey, I'm sorry you had trouble. Here's a cup with our logo on it, right? But I'm sorry you're pissed at our company. Maybe we'll help to be reminded of that with this souvenir mug that we're sending you.
Do you need a bumper sticker by chance?
It's a terrible way to rectify a situation is to remind them of it every time they have a sip of Sanka or whatever.
I hate these people.
So I
hate these guys. This is a sweet mug.
And here's the thing. Obviously, if we had something like that on tap, it's going to be cheap. We're going to send you a cheap polyester hat.
Right. With the rope in front of it and the air conditioning in the back.
That fits everybody, right? It's that type of hat. It's got the tug rope on it that hangs to the side because it's so big because it has to fit the guy with the biggest head ever. And that's what we're going to send you. And this guy gets on the line. He's like, you know, can you send me a hat? And I respect that, man. I thought, I kind of wish I had something to send him. But I said, no, you know, we don't really do that. We just try to, you came to us with a problem. We try to solve that particular problem as best as possible. And we feel like that's fair.
See, I find this funny that like people, I don't understand how you can't look at the world as it is. Like, can you imagine the tunnel that you have to live in to think that the customer service man you're talking to is in charge of dishing out free hats to people? You know, this happens to me all the time. I work for a Caterpillar dealership, right? And every time I go somewhere, they're like, "Hey, man, you got a Caterpillar hat?" I'm like, "Yeah, no." He's like, "I spend like $50,000 a year with you guys." I'm like, "Look, I just don't keep a stack of hats in my service vehicle.
I have to call the hat department.
I fix the stuff. You know what? They don't let me just keep like $2,000 worth of hats in the back and chuck them out to people." And he's like, "Well, I feel like I deserve a hat."
Hey, man, isn't that like J. Paul Getty looking for a free pin? "Hey, I spend $50,000 a year. Can I have a free shirt?" Like, if you want to, just buy the shirt.
That's the thing. Like, the hat outright, if you'd have bought it on Amazon, was $6. But if I have to get it from the Caterpillar store, it's like $37. You know what I'm saying? And so, and I'm going to bill you for it, right? I'll get you the hat, but I'm just going to tack it onto your bill. You ain't getting no free hat.
Just put it as miscellaneous.
Yeah, I'm just going to put miscellaneous shop charges, hat.
What was that, like oil or something? No, that was your hat.
No,
man.
That was that hat you begged for. I'm sorry.
That's just a weird thought process. They say like, "Hey, as soon as I'm rich, as soon as I have enough money..." Like, normally I think when I attain enough money, I can buy things that I want. But this guy's thought process is, when I have enough money, people should give me stuff for free.
People should give me a hat.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming. That's weird.
I'm going to start using that, though.
I very well be.
I'm just going to start going to random businesses and demanding some kind of merchandise outside of what they normally
do. Well, that's the thing. It's
got to work once
in a while. It has to be working somewhere. Yeah, right. He's going into the Great Clips and being like, "I want some scissors, you know? I just gave you $12 for this haircut.
I come to this Best Buy all the time. Where's my shirt that doesn't fit me?"
"You owe me one of them thinning shirts. Scissors with the little grooves in it. I'll take it home right now."
"Can I get some clipper oil or something? I don't know."
"What?
Clipper oil.
Do you ever maintenance your clippers?"
"Yeah."
"Oh.
Well, they start snagging if you don't."
"Really?
You, I just Dan, you maintenance your clippers too?"
No, but I go to, I go places that use clippers and they have to, yeah.
Okay.
I just turn the screw until it stops making that terrible noise and then like, yeah, it's working.
How long's it been since you've replaced your clippers?
What do you mean?
Nah, my point exactly.
I usually buy the dog clippers, the ones for like $15.
The dog clippers?
Yeah, they show a picture of the guy shaving the dog. I'm like, those got to be good enough for me. Look at the dog's hair's like 6 inches long. I feel like mine's only a couple.
Hey, yeah.
Just change your ways.
Parlay.
Just get a good set of clippers, man. Come on.
I ordered a set. Like the last time, well, 2 times ago when I ordered some clippers.
I did
a net search finally, and I asked, "What are other men using?" Tell me what are other
men? It's a dangerous situation.
And so there was like some kind of sport clipper, and I thought, do we have to be so cliche, fellas? that we have to have like a sport clipper?
Exactly. Yeah. Clippers for men.
It was yellow, and it had like a streak down the side, like it's a pair of running pants.
It's got a football player on the front going, "Yeah."
we have to be so predictable. It's foolish. It looks like it's got motion. I'll let it cut my hair.
Do you have clippers that look like a beer? Because that would really be me.
I was embarrassed, but I thought, hey, man, maybe it's just the design, but still dudes use it, you know?
Yeah.
And so I took it, and it worked well for about 4 months, and then I took it to the Philippines, and I plugged it into the wall outlet,
and it blew up.
Set it on fire, and I thought, I didn't call it in, because I didn't want to admit to the Filipino hotelier that I had started a fire in the bathroom, because it started on fire, and I just put it in the shower.
Right on.
What? Yeah.
Electrical fire right in the shower. Solid.
Yeah. That's where I threw my electrical plants.
That's sleuthing at its best, man.
Excuse me.
You don't fix this. Shower.
Blender's overheating, man. Throw it in the shower.
Hey, I was in the Philippines for a month and didn't light anything on fire.
Hold on. Two things. One, it was already fried.
Fair enough.
So the chances of it continuing to fry through toaster style in a bathroom, I think, are overdone. I feel like it would not work again.
Hold on. Before you move on to your second point, just as a quick counterargument. Based on you plugging it in incorrectly, I would assume your knowledge of electricity is low anyway. And so the information you've put into, it'll stop frying once I put it in the shower, probably can't be trusted.
Yeah, I'm going to call point to Mike.
There wasn't a sign for like with the tall. With
American with your sports clippers. Please do not plug these into
like
a wall.
Tall, dumb white guy with an X on it, plugging it into the thing. Kind of expected.
You have to have a specific Ben, don't do this sign.
So anyway, point two, I unplugged it from the wall. Mm-hmm. Doesn't that solve all problems?
Yeah.
Electricity doesn't jump like that.
Yeah, it does.
It was like 4 feet away, Mike.
No, yeah, that's under.
That's what I'm saying. Wisdom. Yeah. Point for me.
I'm going to say point to Mike
move
on that one
move
anyway.
A point for me.
Nope. Not giving you
anyway,
a point.
Anyway, I rebought sports clippers in a blazing orange. And do I feel
Ben's
swift?
Sport Clippers.
You're listening live from the Path on livefromthepath.org, broadcasting every Monday night starting 10-ish. Normally it's about the honest faith, fierce Grayson. Sometimes this. And so, it looks like you've landed on it this week. Yeah. What do we got going on the show today, Ben?
So, what we were talking about. I have a list of articles that I wanted to talk about, and then I've gotten rid of them somehow. So, I was looking on, there's a, the ChristianPost.com was carrying probably, they have 10 guys that do regular commentary for this, thing. Now don't go to the ChristianPost.com. It is an ad fest. Like, it's, right. I don't know that actual Jesus people run it. I think they just sucker people in and then they infect your computer with something.
Like those things on the Facebook that are like 7 Christians that left Hollywood. I'm like, ooh, who are they?
Mike, I've known you for years, man. I would not expect you to be the guy that gets suckered in on
No,
that,
I'm a closet gossip hound.
A closet gossip hound.
If it has to do with Jesus, I'm like, who is Denzel Washington in it? I know it's Denzel.
You immediately go to Denzel
There's
Washington.
There's like one guy that I'm like, cool, and the other guy's like, who? Who's that guy? It's like he used to be the second stand-in Lassie, and his owner was a Jesus man. They're like, ah, crap, I didn't care about that, you know? That's where they get you in there.
It is funky. Like, it was like 7 relatives of Brad Pitt that subsist on mayonnaise alone, and you're like, I have to know, is it his cousin or is it not? So anyway, but on the ChristianPost.com, they got like 10 guys that do contribute articles and stuff, and by my estimate, at least 7 of them attended that meeting of evangelical folk with Donald Trump and had something to say about it, and they were all terrible articles. Like, they didn't contain any bit of, like, here's how we can think about the world because we love Jesus. It was just like, I was important because I went to this thing and people talked to me and now I don't know. Like, well, that's very helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing.
I mean, do you run into, like, we're not going to stay on this Trump subject often, but like, do you run into people that are legit struggling with this? Like what they're going to do, especially those from the evangelical camp.
Yes.
What they're going to do because Trump is the Republican.
And it's not a like for argument. It's a lesser two evils type of discussion. Legitimately, like, I think you can, when you're faced with two choices, I feel like you're going to struggle with that, with trying to make certain decisions. And I get it. It's just that, like, I don't know, people are just having weird conversations.
It is weird.
Yeah.
I've never struggled ever with it's like, I look at the two and I go, okay, that's the person. And then I just go on.
Yeah.
So I decided, like, you know, months ago, I just know who it is. What's the struggle? I mean, everybody's looking for like the perfect whatever, and I don't get it. I'm like Mr. Right Wing Wacky Christian. Uh-huh. I fit the stereotypes of the people who should be struggling.
Uh-huh.
I've never struggled with politics.
No,
I don't. I mean, I struggle with what people do and stuff. I don't struggle with like my decision. I was like, okay, well, that wasn't hard. You know, I mean,
like, it's real pragmatic, right? Like, you're just gonna look at something and be like, this is what it is. I can think about it for 10 more weeks, but it's not going to change the president.
It doesn't change. Yeah, exactly. And people are more emotional on this one than I've ever seen.
Yeah.
On this round.
Yeah.
Do you insane. Do you think it's because the definitions that normally define each party have just become gray all over the place?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's because everybody has lied to everybody. And the people are kind of like, which is your all.
Well, see, now I feel like that's always going on, and they were just better at it.
Right.
Like
so you always thought, well, this one won't lie.
Yeah. Well, then, I mean, that's the thing.
And then you finally go, wait, no, they've all lied.
Politics has always been this, but they used to be able to pull it off with some panache. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And now we just get like brute force liars, and you know they're doing it, and you're like,
they're just using this for a vote. I mean, you know, that's their job. They're trying to get votes. You know.
Yeah. Well, I don't like politics.
You know, actually, maybe that is something. Ignore the politicians for a minute. I think there's a bit of a realization as an electorate, right? Like, we're actually coming to terms with our own probably laziness, our own assumptions about how people act in politics and stuff. And frankly, our disengagement in various things. Like, we kind of disengaged from the world a little bit and said, these people will handle things. And they don't handle things how we want. And I think, frankly, some of the reality of you kind of have to do things in your own life. It's very similar to discipleship. We're like, we kind of cast off, like, if people can read the right books or you can listen to the right pastors or you can go to the right church, maybe people will just love Jesus. And we kind of separated it and put it on kind of a machine, as if we didn't have a personal stake in being the ambassadors for the gospel. And I think we're actually coming to that realization from a political standpoint as well. It's like we expect people to kind of save the world, and we realize that the people that you elect into office are, you know, a quarter of a percent of a population somewhere, and the rest of the people actually have to live in a world where you're helping your neighbor, where you are, you know, caring about the things that are going on in your local government, where you are fighting for injustice and to right morality and whatever it is that you care about. I think as the veil is gone a little bit from what we expect out of politicians, it's actually landing pretty hard on the people who may have bailed from some of these processes a little bit. And I don't even just mean things outside of taking part in elections, but even actually taking part in elections. Like instead of having groups otherwise defined, well, because we love this thing, we just pass this on and this is who you vote for. Like, people actually having to take a little bit of control and say, hey, I'm a little bit more nuanced than X group says vote for this guy and I love it. And that lands hard. Anytime that you land on more responsibility for yourself, and frankly, it otherwise implies that maybe you didn't handle that responsibility well in previous occasions, like, that actually lands pretty hard, and you take it out on the politician. But frankly, a lot of it kind of sits on us. If you weren't, you know, part of that stuff, it should just be a reflection of what it is that your values are, as opposed to, and maybe this goes back to a little bit what Dan was talking about. I think our disappointment comes in is because we expected people to solve those types of problems. And then when they don't, now we we're disenfranchised by that. Whereas if I didn't expect that level of change in the world on those people to begin with, I'm not so upset when I find out that they can't actually accomplish it. Then it does become way more of a pragmatic type of decision.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
And these guys are so good. When I say these guys, the political parties are so good at getting the common people like us mad at each other, and they just sit back and watch, and then that raises their money, that gets everybody fighting, everybody's on the internet screaming at each other, yeah, you know, and they're sitting back going, when they basically did the same thing anyway. Whoever wins, it's the same thing. It's going to be the same thing.
Yeah.
Mostly. I mean, there's some, you know, variation.
And it puts again, and again, back in kind of that discipleship mentality, is that like they're just, you can't farm out your life. You just quit farming out your life and your expectations on something that's bigger than you. Live in your life. Live in your community. Live with your family. Control what you can control, as opposed to fighting hard to control things that you may not be able to control. I mean, definitely vote. I mean, here's the deal. Like, your local governments and even your broader governments, that's your community too, right? You can't just bail on those things. However, you know, that when you have moved your hope into that type of thing, especially as a Christian, especially as someone where your hope is ultimately in Jesus, and frankly, watching the power of what he can do in your life and the lives around you, like, just hold it in the right frame of mind, as opposed to losing your crazy eyes on it. I think that's why it's difficult. People, I think, are struggling, but I wonder, they're probably not struggling for the reasons they think they're struggling. I think a lot of times we're struggling is because we push too much hope onto certain, government infrastructures or people or whatever, to otherwise change our lives, as opposed to actually taking some level of responsibility and saying, look, am I living out my own, the things that I can control to the greatest ability? And the truth is, we're probably not.
No, well, I mean, that's true across the board it's true in the church too. Like, it's exactly the same thing, right? Like, people always try to dump most of that responsibility on, you know, feeding the homeless and taking care of widows and orphans. And we're like, we as a church should go do this thing. And like, or you could do it. Why don't you go do it?
Yeah, you do it.
You know what I'm saying? Take a guy with you. And they're like, well, we got to print up shirts. Well, we don't really need to print up shirts. we can just get a guy, and then we'll go feed people, and then that's it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't have to get a committee or get 10 guys to agree with you or try to find it in the budget numbers. Why don't you find it in your budget? You know, take 20 bucks out of your own plate and figure out how you're going to do it. And I think if you saw that happen and people take a little bit more responsibility, and this is on me too. I'm not preaching to people that aren't me, you know. But like, if there's, especially, when God starts to put something on your heart of the things that he wants you involved with in, it doesn't necessarily have to be backed up by like 10 different guys, right? If God's like, Mike, I want you to do this, my first instinct is like, I got to find some dudes, and we're going to tackle it by like 16 guys. And instead of looking at my wife and kids and going, hey, as a family, here's what we're doing. Here's where I feel like God's got us going. Let's do this thing. And that's not my first move. And I'd really like it to be, right? Because if everybody did that individually, the hands and feet are moving pretty fast.
That's because a lot of times, and again, true in both like, secular life and, in the church, we've defined success by like brute force. How many folk? Was it successful? Were there 30 guys out there? Were there 50 guys out there? Like, can we call a success that a family cared for another family that needed it? Can we call a success that you met someone at work and you've had the ability, like, that guy's going through rough times and Jesus can shine a light on that guy's life. Can we call that a success? And then bundle, the cool thing is, because we get to be part of a big capital C church, then we can put that all together and go, yay! We as a large group of people have been rightfully been ambassadors of the good news of Jesus Christ to the world. But we stop counting things like that. Like we start looking around and saying it wasn't successful because half the people didn't go or a quarter of the people didn't go. Like, they're all relative distinctions. When the truth is, I think if you build it the other way around, if you're just an excited person that's bringing people with you, people will come. People are attracted to that. I mean, there are people who, like, I want to do something. I don't know what to do. And frankly, they'll jump on the first guy that's like, I'm heading over here and doing this. Go ahead and come along. And then those things that we otherwise count for success will happen. Like, they will automatically happen. I just, you know, sometimes we just have this thought process that, like, success means big as opposed to being a cumulative nature of many, many small successes.
Agreed.
All right. You're listening live from The Path. What else did I read on? No, I didn't care about that. That wasn't very important. Mike was riled up because we'll skip your second Donald Trump topic.
We'll skip that one.
Yeah, shoot. I thought there was one other big thing that I thought was, oh, I know what, Dan. I wanted to ask you. There was an article about things people ask the pastor to do just before the sermon. And I was at distractions that happened. I was going to see if these have happened to you.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
All right. Here we go. These were nine distractions that shouldn't happen right before sermon. Number one, personal. Some of these aren't like crazy people. Personal and family problems. It is difficult to be focused on the Word of God when the pastor is dealing with problems of this nature. Please pray for your pastor daily for protection from these types of challenges and problems. Something that you've been impacted by?
Like somebody else's personal problem?
No, I think you, like personal, meaning you.
I mean, yeah?
Yeah, that makes sense. Physical problems. My son Sam preached a sermon, then threw up and passed out. Did that happen to you, Dan? You had the hefts on the stage?
No. there's times I've wondered going in, like, oh, I wonder how this is going to go. And so far, I've never.
That seems different, though, right? Like, I could see throwing up and feeling rough before because, like, you got some heavy stuff to say, or maybe you just in general don't feel
rough. Or you
have rough.
The flu.
Or you got something wrong with you, you know? Yeah. But, like, if after you've preached, you thought, that don't seem right. Like, you didn't do it right or something.
Maybe the communion fermented a little too long.
Dang it, George. This was your week to change it.
How old was that grape juice?
No, but it was good. George can handle it. Let's see. Someone who says, I need to talk to you after the service. Don't say that. Can you imagine what the pastor is likely thinking the entire service?
Do people do that?
I've had that happen. Most of the prime what you're going to say is like stuff that happened to me like prior to our current situation.
Yeah, okay.
In the neutral setting, it's very different.
It doesn't happen that same way.
But there'd be people who, like, you know, they're trying to get you fired. They're like, hey, I want to talk to you after the service. You know?
Creepy.
Dan, I'm going to start doing that to you.
That'd be fine.
Walking up to you right before the service. Dan, we need to talk.
It's really important.
We'll talk afterwards.
Hey, just for the record, that really creeps me out. Like, it doesn't even have to be like something might be personal against me, but if you're like, hey, I got something going on, I need to talk to you after service, I will worry about that. For the next two hours, it'll freak me out. I can't take that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, what's that? Is that what neurotic is? Like when people say that, like if people say, hey, I need to see you later, and like automatically your mind goes to like 1,000 things and you're like, this is going to be bad. It has nothing but bad stuff going to happen.
Neurotic is more of a detail-oriented thing,
isn't it? It's suffering from or caused by relating to neurosis.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Hey, really helpful definition.
Hold on.
Now let's follow neurosis.
Hold on. Neurosis is a class of functional mental disorders involving distress, but neither delusions nor hallucinations.
Yeah, okay, so that fits the bill.
That could be.
Yeah. I mean, you're not...
Your imagination's going wild. And,
yeah.
Yeah, it could involve anxiety, sadness, or depression, anger, irritability. I mean, that could be anything. Like, I get...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that's more of an being anxious thing.
Yeah. I do that when my boss wants to
neurotic.
He says, hey, I need to talk to you upstairs when you get a second. I'm like, oh, no. Like, how many should I take? Should I pack up my stuff? Like, I automatically just assume I'm going to get fired. Ooh. My mind goes crazy.
That's what do you, are you the type of guy that gets worried when you pass a police officer? Like, you just assume that.
Totally.
He's pulling something.
Yeah. Every time. I'm 100% certain that I have everything correct. All my taillights are fine. I've got insurance. Got my license. It's my vehicle. All my license plates are fine. But I'll pass the cop and like, wait a minute. What's happening right now?
I'm guilty.
Oh, man.
But then again, the second police officers see me, they immediately want to either put me in handcuffs or zip ties. I freak cops out. And I've asked people this, and police officers will go, yeah, you're big. I don't want to mess with you. I'm going to put you in
handcuffs. Wait, but you got pulled over for, like, legitimate traffic violations?
I got pulled over in the church van because there was equipment in the back, and I didn't have a license plate on, and the guy zip-tied me.
Really?
He zip-tied me, took the van, and dropped me off at a Walmart.
You not sure he was kidding. A legit cop?
I thought about that, too. I was like, wait a minute. Did I just get shisted by some fake constable? Like,
with
come on,
tie.
Man. Yeah. No, handcuffs don't fit.
Oh, right.
No, I don't know if it's the setting we're in now, Pathway, or if it's that I've gotten older, but that stuff at one time bothered me.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time it bothered me. Now I'm just like, oh, okay, yeah, whatever. Okay, well, I'm just like, right. If I just don't care, it's like, there's nothing you're going to say that's going to upset me. You know, it's like,
Dan's just lost care for it. We need to talk to you.
I don't care
whatever.
About people, but I mean, if like they're out to get me, I'm like, yeah, whatever. Right. You know,
I mean, do their stories, like if you've been doing this for so long, do their stories lose some of their wow? Like in the beginning of of your ministry, people are like, hey, man, we're having trouble with our marriage. Like, oh, no.
I've never heard this
and
one.
And then like 30 years later, you're like, we're having trouble with our marriage. Like, yeah, everybody just so fine.
60% of the guess. Room. Not enough sex and not enough money, right?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Hold on. Let me get a piece of paper.
I just
want
to walk in on Dan doing some kind of marriage counseling where he's like, all right, I get what the problems are. Here's your fix. Goodbye. And then just walks right out.
Which one of you is the sex? Which one is the money? Okay, now that we know our people.
Yeah, every once in a while. Only one time it's been the woman wanting more in my experience.
Hmm.
Is wow.
Hey, you won't be
I
off.
Suppose that dude felt like a
dude. I'm upset.
Yeah, I'm just not really that into it. You kidding me? How'd you get in here?
Maybe you don't have the dude razor.
Yeah,
they must straighten this right out.
They make it in
it's orange.
Did you get the orange one?
Did you get the one that said sport and shiny letters on the front? Because that's the man's one. No, has a lumberjack in the back of it. That's the one we were looking for.
No, I bought the dog shears.
Is that where Christian?
The dog shears.
Is that where Christian counseling fails? We go, look, dude, I can't help you. There's something wrong with you.
Eat some papaya or something. I don't know.
Maybe you should eat the mayonnaise like Brad Pitt's relatives. They seem to be doing all right.
I was reading something on Answers.com last week. Mayonnaise.
When Christian counseling fails.
Let's see. Malfunctioning equipment. Every pastor in every church has many stories here. Huh? Dan, there's troubles with the TVs. I'll be on it.
Yeah, it's just always something.
You can do.
That used to bother me a lot, too. And it's just, and he's going, you know what? Jesus is still here. I'm pretty sure we'll be all right.
He says, I now have 8 different stories where a pastor was asked to unclog a toilet right before the sermon.
Wait a minute, by the guy that did it? Because that'd be worse.
It didn't specify.
I'd rather be the second street guy that's like, something happened in here. But not the guy that's like, I did something in there. Because that's bad.
Has someone ever said, Dan, I need you to unclog the John? I know you're growing up, but can you?
I see. Generally, my response in that type of issue is, "Oh, why don't you go find the building person?" You know, I mean, so I kind of, you know, shove it off. So
that's true. You can avoid a lot of these with rightful delegation.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Hey, the TVs are broken.
Even on top of that, like if it's a clogged toilet thing, why didn't that person just handle it?
What? That's the thing.
Like, I don't understand why that person didn't just go, "Hey, man, this is the house of the Lord. I don't work here though, so I'm not going to be the one who unclogs the toilet."
People say, "Do we have plungers?"
Yeah. Okay, that's more understandable.
Okay, yeah, just
than,
go down. Blah,
hey,
blah,
Dan,
blah,
you're paid by this establishment. You're actually paid by Jesus. Can you go take care of that?
You're
that
my
toilet
guy, right?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, like, I hey, feel man. Like after the age of 8, I tried to handle that on my own.
Exactly.
So it wasn't real obvious that I just done something in there. I think I was at my grandma's one time when I was like 7 or 8, and like I thought. There's too much toilet paper in this toilet. And so I just started putting it in the garbage can.
Oh!
Grandma was mad. Oh, that, she goes, listen, Mike, you can flush multiple times. You don't have to just like, oh, that's the full amount. And then I just start putting it in the toilet garbage can.
This just took a weird spin there,
I never Mike. Made that mistake again.
Life lessons.
I did not know that story.
Yeah.
You have multiple points of family in here that are just like, whoa, gross.
That's why Grandma followed me to the bathroom every time I was over there.
I thought Grandma just didn't take care of her bathroom well.
No.
Well, that changes everything. Whoops.
Oh, gross.
I may have told insensitive stories about Grandma's bathroom to the people. I need to write that
That were
down.
Actually Mike's fault.
Yeah. Grandma, never mind. Let's see. Last minute request. I was in a church 2 years ago where the pastor showed me a handful of written notes. All the notes were last minute requests for him to make announcements.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was. We need to tell the world, Dan.
You see, it's like, oh, that's why I like having it done ahead of time. It's like, oh, we don't have a slide for that. Sorry, you know.
Hey, the slides nice. Are the great excuse.
The PowerPoint has saved Dan's sermons.
Yeah, I've used that one before.
Nice.
Our broken technology has gone beyond the ability to just say things out loud. That's not going to work out. All right. Well, it sounds like a few of those have happened.
What was the last one?
No, that was, criticism. Yes, it happens. Too many pastors are criticized right before they preach. Hey, hey, Dan, you've done poorly in the past. Good luck today.
My expectations are low.
Awesome. I hate what you're about to say.
I've had that, though.
Yeah. Really?
Historically speaking, what you're about to say is awful.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't that, but it
okay,
was,
well, that's
it
good.
Seems like rough times.
I don't understand people. Like, in general. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a right time. Let's say Dan gave a sermon. I'm like, I don't know, man. None of it. You know, I didn't like any of it. Which has happened before, and we've talked about it, but it's always been like a day later. Because, like, you get an instant reaction to something, and I've hated something Dan has said, and then Sunday night, I'm like, you know what? All right. It was all right. Like, I was just making a bad decision. I was not in the right place to hear what he was saying, right? But I've held on to it for 24 hours and said, Dan, when you talk, I don't like that at all, and here's why. Right? Like, there's a way to have a conversation. It's not like Dan is not or your pastor is not a human being of some kind that you can't have a reasonable conversation with. He's like for some reason they look at him, and maybe the Catholics have done this, right? But like a uniformed, like it's just the way you treat the Walmart customer service guy. You're like, you work here, this place is your fault. Everything about it is you, and I want to talk to you. And like it seems like sometimes we do that to the pastors, is like, everything about this joint, your fault, you're the uniformed guy here, and I want to talk about it right now, so here's what we're going to do.
Hey, actually, so here's something to think about, is like, broadly, we have become a, our opinion matters culture, right?
Yep.
I buy things because a group of 8,000 people have reviewed it on Amazon, and it's like 4.5 stars instead of 4 stars. The other thing sucks, it's 4. 4.5, I think it's fantastic. What it has caused, though, like hearing other people's opinion is a positive thing, right? But it has shifted the way that we look at the world. We now look at the world because we have a phone with a pocket full of apps on it that says, let me review this restaurant. Let me review this boat shop. Let me review this bike repairman. Let me review this church. Like, you can do it on Facebook. This church gets 5 stars. This church gets 4 stars, right? So it has created probably some unhealthy sense that we don't actually get to receive things, services from people without feeling that we are in the appropriate spot to rightly judge it and review it. And I'm not sure it's an implicitly bad thing, but what it does is it does separate us from things a little bit, right? Like it causes you, if you are judging something or if you're the person that gives feedback or review on it, you do actually disassociate yourself oftentimes from that. And it doesn't allow you to then, like, give over part of yourself, which a church service would be part of those things, to be able to kind of take it in full. And so it doesn't mean that the things that go on in a church or things go on that have any type of religious affiliation are above reproach and should not contain some elements of, hey, I think we could do that better. Everything wants to do that better. But I would maybe caution how we interact with the world in such a review-driven culture that says this thing requires my opinion, so that now I have my eye out for it. Just like if I'm casually walking by my kid's room, I might glance in there and it doesn't strike me. But if I'm going in, if they said, "Hey, we cleaned our room," I'm going to watch it with a lot stricter eye and be like, "No, I can see that thing sticking out from under the bed that you stuffed there," where I wouldn't know it if I walked by, and it wouldn't have harmed me at all. And so, like, if you're walking into something for a critical eye, it feels like a success to find it. And so a lot of times our reviews or interact with something where we feel like we have to review it, we actually don't get the right experience because we brought into it a critical eye that we wouldn't have necessarily had if we would have just taken it in. So maybe it's just a caution. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a church-specific thing. It's just in general. Just because you can doesn't mean you have to bring into something the nature that says, I am here to critique this. Maybe you just went to the bike shop and you needed a bike fixed and saw it. You don't have to have a strong reaction either way. You paid the guy to fix the bike, you fix the bike, and it's fine.
You know, do you feel like that wears people out? Like, in general, people are – they always say that people the modern generation, they're just sluggish and tired all the time. And you know how much emotional effort it takes to judge everything all the time? Right. Every time you do something, whether you stopped at the subway or the gas station or the bike shop, like Ben said, and like you're like, hey, I don't like this place, but click, 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 go. I didn't like that. This place was all right. Click, 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 go. Right. And so like now it doesn't seem like it would be much, but if you take that and multiply it by 20 times a day, every interaction you had, like even the interaction you had with your friend or the guy that wasn't your friend, you're going to judge them on the Facebook or the Twitter. And you're like, this guy said this to me. Click, click, click. You know what I'm saying? Like you have basically put yourself in a seat of judgment throughout the whole day. And it has got to be exhausting. Right. Like not only did I find this deplorable, but I hate to have other people have to experience the same thing. So I'm going to let them know. It seems like an altruistic altruistic motive in the beginning. Like, I'm just trying to help people out, or they should be aware of this thing. But really, you spent your whole day judging everything that you did and then telling everybody about it. I don't know how you have time for an original thought or be able to take in, like basically instead of going to the poetry contest and taking in the art, you said, I want to be on the judges' table, right? And you missed the whole experience of just sitting in the crowd going, man, that's got some raw stuff going on, when you're just sitting there looking for right rhyme, right flow, right whatever. And then, like, you did that through your whole day, and you multiply that by some years. That's exhausting.
Yeah, I just joined Goodreads. You guys heard of that?
No.
Because Goodreads.com, it's a place where people kind of share you can see what everybody's reading, the things they want to read, the things they're currently reading. When they finish a book, they'll generally give it a rating, provide a little feedback, and you can kind of hook up with your Facebook friends so that people you know and trust, or whether you can kind of see the books that they've had, and maybe, you know, you read it to or read along with them or whatever. So somebody had posted had rated a book that I had read, and they had rated it like 3 stars, and I thought, I wonder what the review was like. And but you couldn't read it without actually signing up for Goodreads. And so I signed up, and then I started trying to add books that I'd read, and I noticed that I stink at review. Like, I love to read, I love to write, but I can't review anything very well because I'm like, yeah, no, that's pretty good. 4.
Yeah,
4.
I care about that. Yeah.
4. 4. And then, like, for something to be fantastic or like a 3, I'm like, well, I don't know.
That seems a little harsh.
Seems all right.
4 seems all right.
It was okay. And I thought, like, I'm the worst.
Middle of the road.
I had that when I was when I was flying to the Philippines. I for some reason I decided I was going to keep some kind of diary. I was there, and so I was trying to write. Hey, I watched 3 movies, and as I was writing them down, I thought, yeah, they were all right. I wouldn't watch them again, but I wouldn't turn them off if they were on. If I sat on the couch, so like I just like I cannot provide any type of actionable insight on life. I just, everything's pretty much all right.
Well, is it in general the world is not set up for people that are easy to get along with? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you want to do that? No, you want to do that? I don't care. Yeah, okay.
Whatever.
People are irritated. Like, make a decision. What's wrong with you? Love or hate it? I need a decision.
Even like, remember we did a review of Tim Timmons' CD.
Yeah.
His latest album. And like, I didn't feel like we had to assign a rating or anything for it, because like, I listened to it and I thought, well, here's kind of what I heard. But like, there were some parts of it that weren't my cup of tea, but it might be somebody else's. So what am I going to say? Like, I give it a 3 because I hated this song. But if you dig on it, like...
That's right.
Why do I have to give it a 3? You dig on it.
If you like bad things, then I guess this song's for you.
I just know, like, it's just... I have a hard time assigning value to something or putting a rating on things, because I feel like it might be all right for somebody else. Or, I don't know, it was all right. It wasn't awful and it wasn't fantastic. Most things are just like, meh, it was okay. It was worth spending my time.
I'm either way about that conversation.
I feel you. Okay. That's good reads. What? Why did you give me a snake face when I kept a diary?
I'm just imagining you keeping a traveling diary of your time over in the Philippines.
I did.
Lit electrical fire on my razor today.
And then I watched Notting Hill.
Cider House Rules right after my sports razor caught on fire, and I threw directly into the shower. Was that entry in there, or did you skip that part of your travel diary? Don't lie.
No, I don't remember. I'd have to go back and check it. It's still on
you
the
kept
net.
It?
It's still on the net.
Oh, you published it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, this was not just for you. You published your own travel diary.
I did. I got a lot of action. Yeah.
What?
People made comments on it?
Yeah. Actually, so here was the funny
part. I don't know anything, any of this part of you. This sounds ridiculous.
So, no.
Yeah, this sounds like a terrible decision from start to finish.
Here's what I didn't want to do.
Watch 3 movies on the plane over.
I was going to be gone for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, I don't want to be posting Facebook updates and stuff all the time on things that I had going on. So what I did was, I said, I'll just keep, like, there's like a website where you can kind of keep a travel log. And so where were you at that day, upload pictures, and then, like, write what was going on. So I did that. I did that, and then...
Just like Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. That's no, legitimately like Facebook,
no,
but for not your friends.
No.
Like, for people who don't care about you personally.
Just wait on it.
Okay, we'll let you finish.
Wait on it. I would have ended up posting... Hey, you remember when Boo-Boo was in the Philippines and you knew that he was swimming, like, 8 times in the same day?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's what I was
people
trying
cared.
To avoid. Yeah. I posted something, like, once every couple days.
Yeah, Boo-Boo in the Philippines would be like, breakfast.
Hey, man, don't even lie. That breakfast buffet was insane, and that's
walking
why I took pictures
street,
of that stuff.
All right,
I went
Boo-Boo.
Swimming with whale sharks once, and that's the one time I pushed
it. Hashtag Boo-Boo's taller than everyone. Hashtag big white and loving it. Like, whatever it is.
Big white and loving it.
Whatever it
sounds
is.
Like the most racist hashtag I could possibly put.
Hashtag no handcuffs in the
super
Philippines.
Super excited to be a big white man in the Philippines. Couldn't be winning more today. There's nobody putting me down. Bigotry! Hashtag. Like, really?
That's pretty low rent, Booba.
That's why I didn't do that.
I've got a little team spirit because I'm a man. Immediately great. White, awesome, big, wonderful.
So, okay, shoot, now in that context, this story's going to sound bad. So,
see? Yeah, exactly.
So there was a restaurant in the Philippines that was named KKK.
Oh, man.
And I took a picture of it, and I said, perhaps we should have rethought the name of this restaurant.
Hey, like, man, there's some funny stuff.
This seems really offensive. And so some guy who was from the Philippines got on and said, you shouldn't say things like that. It was like a very honored title of a military thing. And they were very upset with me for having said that. And I thought, like, hey, man, it's just – it seems culturally insensitive. And I get that maybe they didn't have the same – they didn't have the same problems we had. So, like, it's – I get it. But, like, I – it was just an odd thing, and this guy was really mad. But well, not a friend of mine. He had caught it looking at my open to everyone travel log, and he was very, very upset.
That don't sound like nothing but a mistake to me. I don't know why you would keep a travel log on the internet.
Yes. And so you're saying that I posted a bunch of pictures and hashtagged myself as a big white man, all this different stuff,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And posted stuff to people that I love and I want to see what I'm doing.
Is your first Facebook time leaving profile the country. Public?
Yeah.
Well, all right, then. It's the same problem. Whatever your point.
No, no, no. No, it is not right. The same problem. I posted my deal for people to be able to look at it because they're my friends. Uh-huh. I don't think anyone searched, hey, big white guys in the Philippines, and then popped up my profile.
I don't know how
However,
this...
you had a public journal that you kept, and apparently you offended half the Filipinos.
Entire country.
Now, hold on. I don't understand how he found it. Like, this is not any different than you posting stuff on Facebook from a...
It is more likely for a man to find a public travel journal than he is to stumble upon my page.
You couldn't find it if you wanted to, and you know me.
Because I'm not in the Philippines.
No, it's not a...
Just like a YouTube video.
It's not a Filipino-only travel log.
It probably is. That's why they got upset.
Man, Boova, I was with you until that was a poor
you
set of...
You embarrassed yourself.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Ben's right. Your Facebook profile is disgusting.
I need to stop hashtagging big white man.
Batman. Batman in the Philippines.
Hey, admittedly, there was a time when I posted way too much because I first had an Instagram and I was like, hey, now I can put pictures on both these. And I went crazy. I will admit to that. I was a 22-year-old dude that was just like, yeah, social media. Yeah, I get it. And then I decided to back away from that and then stop taking selfies in general.
Tell me when you're done. And then I will refriend you on the Facebook.
Are we not friends on the Facebook right now?
You didn't even notice, did you?
No, I didn't notice. Okay. All right, fine. Hashtag defriend.
I changed my profile picture of me unfriending you.
Just a screenshot of a click. Unfriend.
Booba no longer.
All right, you want to do some deer life from
the
past?
Yeah, yeah, what do you got?
Oh, hey, real quick, I went to Bash on the Farm.
Oh, yeah.
Our setup was to, it's a music festival up in Forest City, Iowa, and it's a two-day festival, and we were all geared up to, we were gonna broadcast from this thing, and it ended up shaking out that way. I think we really want to try to do it next year, maybe. We'll see if we can't get our ducks in a row. But the oldest daughter went, and I was a little hesitant because my oldest daughter, Grace, is, she's like me. And so it's basically two socially awkward people going to this festival full of people. And I thought, well, we might have a great time or we might totally hate it. We'll see. And so, we went up there and here's a couple things that I liked that really went very, very well is, first of all, the hard rocking stage, was excellent. And every band that Grace and I watched, we happened to walk in right when Silverside was playing and we know Silverside from the show. And, Laura from Silverside tends to give a pretty honest, straight up testimony, that she was in a bad place and she was doing some rough stuff and she came to one night and she had to make a decision and she yelled out to God and God showed up. And, but it was stuff that like my daughter knows nothing about, absolutely nothing about, just some really heavy life stuff. And, she's sitting there, you know, giving her testimony because she's talking to a bunch of grown-ups, and I've brought my 8-year-old, you know.
Yeah.
And my daughter's just sitting there listening to it, and her eyes are kind of getting wide, and she's starting to kind of look at the floor a little bit. And, like, I really loved it. I love that we had the fact to have that we were able to have a conversation about it because I said, hey, you know, can we talk about what she just said real quick? Because she's like, I don't understand what she's saying, but it sounds really, really bad. And so we talked to her for a little while, or I talked to her for a little while. And, I said, here's what we're going to do. I said, I'm going to explain a little bit of what she's talking about, but I want you to, she basically said that story scares me. And I said, I want you to always remember that story. Like, look at me right in the eyes. And I made her sit there stare at me. And I said, always remember that story that Laura told. I said, because it shows you, the depth of God's grace
and that you cannot outrun it. And I said, there's a certain life that you're not going to know anything about because God's grace grabbed you early. And you live in this family, and we follow Jesus right now. And said, hopefully you will never run into some of these things that she's saying. But the people that you're going to meet and the people that you're going to get to know will absolutely have run into that. And I want you to know that God's grace covers all that. And we're going to meet Laura. And so after Silverside got done, me and Grace went up and met her and whatever. And I had her talk to her a little bit. And she wrote, she signed an autograph for us, you know, whatever. And it said, I can't remember what it said. It was always, thank you for coming. You're so beautiful. Love Laura, you know. And like, it just meant the world to Grace. And like everyone in that Hard Rock stage is not Johnny, 50-year-old Republican Christian. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, they're in a regular looking dude in the house. I'm the most white bread suburban dude in that room. And so it was really cool that Grace got to, because, and I purposely, it started getting cheesy towards the end of the day, but I'm like, see that guy? He loves Jesus. See that guy with the shovel and the zombie mask on? Loves Jesus. You know what I'm saying? And we got to go around the whole festival, and like, these are people that she's not going to run into coming to this church or the circle of friends that I normally hang out with, apart from what comes in here for the show, right? And so that part was very, very cool. We did get handed Bible tracts. Gospel tracts on three separate occasions, me and her. So they would hand one to me and say, here you go, brother. And then they'd look right at Grace and say, here you go, sister. Good news. And then Grace would look at me and say, what is this? And I said, well, it basically tells, you know, that God is good and Jesus is who he says he is, but it's on a piece of paper. And it's so people can get to know him
better.
We
call it a waste of money.
And Chris looks right at me and goes, does that work?
Yes.
I said, no.
Oh, I'm so proud of her right now.
I said, but here's the deal. The guy that handed him out thinks that it does. His heart's in the right place. And he's kind of wasting his effort. But, you know, he's trying to do the right thing, right? And so we leave this stage, go do something, come back. Same dude. Come up, give me another one. And her another one. He come back 5 minutes later and gives me it. I'm still holding the original one he gave me, right? So we're up to gospel track round three. Here comes the exact same guy. He's like, have you heard the good news, brother? And hands me a piece of paper into the same hand. I'm holding the one he gave me 5 minutes ago. And I thought, you know what? You're doing the best you can, bro. I hear what he's, yeah, thank you. Thank you. Man. Take them. Grace goes, what are we going to do with these? I said, we ain't giving it to anybody. I said, if you feel like you want to talk to somebody about the gospel, I'll go with you. We'll do it as a team and we'll do it verbally because that's how I feel like it works best. And so, anyway, the event as a whole was very, very cool. Taking Grace was, I'm really, really glad I did it. I'm glad I took her and not the whole family, because then it turns into a thing. You got to kind of watch both the girls, make sure my wife's not bored and all this jazz. You know what I'm saying? Like, me and her got to sit and to listen to some music and meet some very cool people that love Jesus that look and act nothing like the people that she normally meets. And so that was very, very cool. The gospel track thing was, but it was cool because I got to explain to her that gospel tracks really, I mean, maybe they work. People say they work. I don't understand. People are like, I read a gospel track one time, changed my whole life. And I'm like, I feel like a fool because I would immediately say, that doesn't work. But we got to talk about that a little bit. And so overall, the music was very, very cool. The heavy metal stage is where it's at, bro. That's where you got to go. That's where all the cool folks are hanging out. They are absolutely toned down religion and all Jesus, all power of God, all power of Christ. And they will, it comes from a very unlikely source. You see, I mean, literally, there were four guys wearing zombie masks, carrying shovels, singing a tune. You know what I'm saying? Cause they were called grave robbers, you know? And like, I can't remember what the lyrics were, but something like, you think you've seen ghosts? I know a ghost. He's the Holy Ghost. You know what I'm like?
Oh, that's awesome.
It's tying in, I guess, you know? But here's the deal. I got 20 guys right in the front row. Yeah. I'm like, you know what? Okay, love it. You know, this will work for me. And then, you know, they'll stop and they'll tell how Christ changed their life. And I'm like, first of all, I'm a prude. And I've got to open my eyes wider than they currently are. Because when Zombie Man come up, I'm like, I don't know about this. This can't be from Jesus. Zombie Man with a shovel. These are my internal thoughts, right? I'm like, this can't be it. And then, you know, they sit there and talk about the same God I know. The same Christ I know. The same grace that I know. And I'm like, okay, right on. Forget it. I'm in. You know? And so that part was very, very cool. On the whole, the music was pretty awesome. Someone sang Good Good Father, which I caught, which was pretty good. Other than that, the general contemporary stuff, I can give or take it. But it was a very cool event. Of course, it was free. I don't know. I think if you can get the chance to, if there's a safe place to do this with your kids, is to get them, somewhere, to meet people that they're not normally gonna meet, a Christian music festival is probably the place. find all the guys with the tattoos and pink hair and follow them to whatever stage they're going and go hang out over there. I promise you, most of those people know God's grace like you wish you did. And, like, I'm not saying subject yourself to some real poor stuff just so you can see it in what it is. But, like, if you want to understand the power that God has and what Christ can pull people away from, you can get that a lot of places. But those guys got some stories, and they are brutally honest, and they are very cool people to know because they know Jesus like you'd hope you would, you know, just attending regular whatever Wednesday night meetings or something. Yeah. So overall, it was a very cool experience. I'm glad I went.
Cool. You can go find Bash on the Farm on Facebook. That's where they post most of their updates. Excuse me. And you can kind of see have that flag so that you can get updates as they position for next year. So literally on the farm though, Mike. Like, I haven't been out here.
Yeah, I was at a fairground.
Oh,
a big park.
Oh, not a farm.
Yeah, there wasn't like cows and stuff roaming about.
Well, dang, I kind of.
I mean, the town's rural. Rural.
Yeah, dang, do chickens have ears?
Oh, yeah. It's in their beak. That's the hole in the beak.
That's the ear?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was trying to decide if you could have chickens in. Hold on, wait. I can connect this for you. I was trying to decide whether you could have a bunch of chickens roaming around in the heavy metal stage and whether they would know it. Like, would they be irritated by the noise or not?
I don't know. If they hold their nostrils up in the air, they're digging on it. If they hold them down, then they might not quite get it. That's my experience with chickens.
Do you talk to chickens?
Do I talk to my chickens?
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I have a rooster, and he come up and meets my truck every time when I get home, and I salute him and say, "Good afternoon, Cockerel."
What? His name is Cockerel?
Yeah. Yeah. And his hair flows in the wind like Fabio. So like when he comes running up to you, he always does this number. And his hair is like flowing behind him. It's beautiful to watch him. He's very majestic. And so I felt like I should start saluting him. So I get out of the truck and I go, "Cockerel." And then he goes about his day. He's a good man. Okay, here we go. Ready? Hey, incidentally, just in case you're listening at home, that nostril thing with chickens, I made that up. That's not even true.
Well, do they have ears or don't they?
Yeah, I'm sure they hear something, Ben.
You legitimately thought the holes in their beaks was their ears?
Their nostrils, Ben.
That seemed viable to me.
It worked. Like, I saw Mike's face at the same time I saw Ben's face. Mike is going, "That ain't true." Ben is going, "Yeah, that makes sense."
Yeah, totally. Now, ears in the nose, sure.
Hey, so I've started "Do chickens have" into the Google.
Oh, no.
"Do chickens have ears" is the top suggestion. Do chickens have nipples, tongues? Yeah. Anyway. Other people are looking for weird stuff, too. Hold on. "Most birds, including chickens, hear well. Birds have ears on both sides of their heads in their nostrils."
It doesn't say that.
Oh, really?
I'm looking right at it. And that's a picture.
That last part was convenient.
That's a picture of a turkey.
Yeah, it's under hearing ability of poultry. All poultry.
There is an article written on hearing ability of poultry.
This is what the internet does to people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's because it's a giant platform where you can post your travel diary, and then some random Filipino dude is just like, "Hey, that's a sweet, that's a war thing. You're a jerk.
How dare you?" And you know what? I'm an expert on poultry hearing, and I'm going to tell you something.
You see those holes inside the beak? Yeah, it's their ears.
Here we go. We got to get some advice here.
Okay, yeah.
Dear Life from the Path, I'm moving in a few weeks, and I've asked my girlfriend of 2 years to move in with me. She's considering it, but I suspect she's unsure about it because I am pretty messy at times. Underwear tossed on the floor, plates piling up in the kitchen every other day, etc. I bet etc. covers a lot of ground. I know if I could get my act together, she would happily move in, which is something I really want. Can you please give me some tips on becoming better at cleaning? I would hate for her to move in and feel like my maid, or worse, not move in at all.
Seems like the basis for a solid relationship.
Yeah. I hate to make you feel like my maid, but I'm not going to clean this stuff up. So if you want it to look better, you're going to have to do something.
This ties directly back into the conversation from last week, where I'm guessing this is a younger dude that's just a straight-up fool.
Yeah.
Absolute fool. First off, I'm glad your girlfriend is unsure about moving in with you. She should be, for multiple reasons, because she's your girlfriend, first off. I covered that one for you, Dan.
Thank you.
Second off, you know that feeling you get when you're about to go to bed and you think to yourself, "Dude, there's still dishes in the sink. I know that My undies are on the floor right now, but I'm super tired. Shut up, stand up, go do it real quick, and then go to bed. I promise you that will be the start of you figuring it out.
Hold on. Sorry, just a minor technical question. At a time when if you've discarded your underpants, what is it that you were doing afterwards that had to take so much time that you looked at them on the floor and be like, you know what, I'm too tired now.
Here's the deal. I've been there. Like, I'm gonna admit this on the radio show right now. I've totally been there. Where I'm just like, man, I know that, like, my dirty clothes are right there. 3 feet away from me. But it's just, this is a comfortable bed. And it feels like the amount of effort it's gonna take for me to get up right now and take care of that is unnecessary. Cause it's gonna be there in the morning, and then I can make the decision then. But then the morning comes and I'm just like, you know, I know that
there's
dirty clothes piles.
Now.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, man, I know that I can get that done later on tonight when I'm back from work. I could probably do that later. And then 6 months later, you're like, I know that I just got in trouble with the health inspector. And
I feel like he's overreacting.
I had to burn all my clothes.
Probably voting for Trump, I'd guess.
No, stop being a joke. Figure out the fact that there's responsibilities you have to take care of. First off, love Jesus. Second off, pick up your dirty laundry.
Here's the deal.
Do your dishes.
Fellas, and this is where fellas get into trouble. We always talk about Jesus is pretty awesome in the way that he says, look, come and follow me. And you look at the things in your life that are making that difficult, and God allows you to put up your own fences. To say, I have a problem straying from this yard and this yard. I'm going to put up my own fences, and I'm going to find people to help me with these fences. So here's the deal. Single fella, here's what you're going to do. You're going to get one cup. That's it. Don't buy like 10 cups. Yeah. Don't buy a whole
that
sleeve of plastic
truth.
Cups. You get yourself one cup. And if you're a lazy bum, leave it on there with orange juice in it for 2 days. You got to drink out of the sink. But you know what you didn't do? Dirty another cup. You get one cup. You get yourself enough clothes to get through a week. That's it. There's no you don't need 17 towels. You don't need 3 bed comforters. You don't need multiple anything. You are just one man. So get yourself one cup, one set of silverware. You'll figure out. You'll wash them.
Yeah, 2 towels. You can have an air and a spare. That's it.
Yeah, air and spare.
Air and a spare.
That's it.
That is. You should create a company that's bundles of towels and call it air and a spare.
Yeah, that's it.
The only other option for a single man is to buy a bunch of disposable crap. You're just going to spend a lot of money that way.
That's bad stewardship.
And do it. I mean, because I know how guys are, right? Like, if you're going to get one cup, it's got to be an awesome cup. You know what I'm saying?
Truth.
You got to love it and be like, this is my cup, and no one can use it, and no one can come over. Because here's the deal: as a single man, you don't need people at your place. Seriously, what do you need people? Name one time where that ended not poorly, right? Where someone's head didn't get through a wall, or somebody didn't spill crap all over the floor, or like, hey, I didn't ask, but is it cool if I bring my dog over and the dog pee everywhere?
Yeah. Either you're going to have a bunch of hooligan friends over, or you're going to put yourself in a situation you probably shouldn't be in with your lady friend.
Nope.
Either way, you don't need to have folks over.
No. People don't need to be at your. In fact, if you want to learn how to do life, you need to have yourself over at a married couple's house so you can see how marriage works. And then a married couple's house that has some kids so you can see how that family works. And so if that's what you're striving for, those are the people that you can hang out with. Go hang out with your buddies who you are known to cause trouble with, even if it's not against Jesus kind of trouble, but just I lit fireworks off in the bathroom kind of trouble. You don't want to be doing that at your place. So you say, hey, man, let's meet at the park or over at your house because you ain't coming here. I only got one cup.
Now, wait a minute. See, here's the problem with this. Is the guy's immature and lazy. He will never get beyond that because he only has one cup. He needs to learn how to wash his cups.
No, I disagree.
Yeah.
I completely disagree.
It's just what it is. He needs to grow up and be a big boy.
And here's,
do
here's
his laundry,
why.
Wash his clothes, be responsible.
I run into this with my kids all the time. I go up into their rooms and I say, this place is a disaster. Why is it every time I come up here, it's a disaster? Well, I helped them clean it one time. It's a disaster because they don't have enough room to put all the crap they have. They have way too much crap.
Yeah, you can have too much. I'm
and
not
so
saying that.
You tell me why a single man needs more than one cup. Tell me. There is no reason for that man to have
another
cup.
Is he ever going to have his girlfriend over for supper?
She can bring her own cup.
Oh, yeah, that's probably where you lost me, Mike. I don't think I'm going to say to my lady, hey, sweetheart, you know I love you. You want dinner tonight, right? Make sure you bring your plate.
You better bring a plate and a cup.
I got a Superman cup. Bring
I got one.
We're not having takeouts. So you might need to grab a fork and a knife.
You can take her out to the local establishment and say, pick out your own cup, babe. It's on me.
Is that the fancy deal?
And I will. Instead
is
of
it
keeping,
fancier to go to a gas station and grab the $1 deal and then take it back to your place? Like, this
and
is
drink
yours.
All the soda real fast? I got you a cup. 44 ounces. It's better than my 12-ounce cup. You ain't using that one.
Hey, man, here's the deal. Okay, so there's two parts to this. It's A, that is completely true. I inherited all my parents' dishes. There's no reason for me to have this much dishes.
Nope.
Like, I have a whole cupboard full of cups. I use one cup. Like, legitimately, all those cups have been sitting there for 2 years and have never been touched by me. I don't remember the last time I have this flower mug that was my mom's. It's never once been used by me. And then apparently my mom had an infatuation with lids because I've got like 40 mug lids, but whatever.
Sure.
So that's totally fair. I have one pitcher that I use because I could pour a little bit into it, and then I can have a normal drink of OJ. Or I can fill it and then drink a liter of water at
a
time.
Wait a minute, you drink out of a pitcher?
Yes.
Hey,
it's barbaric, but it works.
I don't have any problem with this.
It works, man. Because if I want ice water for like the whole night, I can fill this thing up with ice and then fill it up with water and just set it next to my bed. Wake up gasping, drink half a like a pitcher of water, yeah. And then set it back down. Wake up 6:30 a.m. It is still cold.
What's that, Nick? You do that stuff? Nick Harris acting like that's fine. Seems pretty normal to have a giant pitcher of water.
Yeah, because like if I want to drink of like milk or something, I'll fill a little bit up. Like I don't drink the whole pitcher of milk.
That's ridiculous.
Hey man,
we're
this
talking
is me.
Like a serving pitcher. Like a mist, like an iced tea.
There was a pre-Jesus Buva that may have taken it from a local drinking establishment.
You stole a pitcher.
Wait, I did not steal it. I said I took it. And I say that because I asked the waitress if I could have it.
You mean the lady that is not in charge of the restaurant,
and
just someone that works
there.
Buy that pitcher in the first
she
place.
She went and asked her boss. He had no idea what to say other than, well, yeah, I guess he can have it. And so I have a giant pitcher that has a Bacardi logo on the side of it because it's from a local drinking establishment.
That I drink milk and orange juice out of.
But not once have I ever had Bacardi in this pitcher. It's only normally water. But it works. Okay, but the second thing is, to piggyback off of what Mike said, if you're a single dude or a single gal, like seriously, if you're at that point where you still have a lot of stuff to figure out, find a couple to hang out with. Totally do that. I agree with Mike. Find a couple that may not have kids and just watch them. Not creepily. Not like
from the window.
Not on the
interwebs.
Kitchen window. Just like, hey guys.
Hey, can I read your travel diary?
No. Befriend a couple and just like a married couple and be like, here's the deal. I have no idea how to exist in your realm and I need you to show me, but I don't want it to be like a class. I want to just show up and hang out with you. And like, I'll bring dessert and we'll do dinner every once in a while. Right? Also, find a married couple that has kids. Go hang out with them. Find somebody who's got 20 kids, because if they can figure that deal out, you with two is nothing. Yeah. Right? Go watch them, figure out their life, ask them questions if you need to, where you're like, I don't get how you're a father in this deal, because I would go insane. And they go, well, yeah, you kind of figured out after a while. And then story, 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 story. Find somebody like that. Yes, do that. If you're a single person, figure that out right now. Find people that are further along in their life and figure out how they're doing it successfully.
Okay, so the man's question was, can you please give me some tips on becoming better at cleaning? And our short answer is no. We can only give you tips on becoming a better man in general. And the cleaning will just come on the wayside.
True.
All right. Secular says, your problem may be less that you're messy than that you're a procrastinator. Excellent. Hold on. Here's some basics. Buy a large wicker basket and keep it in a corner of your bedroom or closet. When the underwear and socks come off, toss them into the basket instead of on the floor. When you remove your pants and shirt, instead of throwing them over a chair, hang them up.
Novel.
And since you're a child, paint a target on the bottom of it, and then you can make it a game.
Maybe we get some Cheerios. You
100
can pee
points
on
for
in
the red
toilet.
Dot. Well, I get myself a
hey, that's how I get rid of my socks every night.
Wee.
It's a wicker basket as well.
Dan's got a bullseye hamper.
And a little basketball hoop that goes, congratulations, Dan.
You did something adult today.
Did you pay the water
bill?
Oh, shucks.
We joke about that. That is totally going to happen. 5 years down the line, people are going to be like, man, how do we get single dudes to be adults? And then we go, let's give them some kind of encouragement, like a basketball hoop that says,
you're
congratulations.
Awesome.
You're one step closer to being an adult.
Hold on. The advice continues. After you're finished eating, either put your plate, silverware, etc. into the dishwasher and hand wash them immediately and put them where they belong. Try it for a week and you'll be amazed about how tidy your place will be.
So true.
What?
The advice
completely
is
true.
Clean for a week.
No, seriously.
And your place will be clean.
You guys joke, but seriously, if you're struggling to the point where you have never done this before, after a week it becomes normal.
Yeah.
It totally does. After a week of cleaning every single night and making sure the dishes aren't sitting in your sink for 3 days, if you just do them, immediately put them away, when you wake up the next morning and you don't have to do them, it is a feeling you're not even expecting right now.
No, I agree with that. I'm hesitating whether it makes any sense to continue to date a man who needs step-by-step instructions where he takes off his clothes and goes, now what do I do?
Yeah.
I know that they go into the washer eventually.
Who's,
but yeah. What will I do with them between now and then?
Agreed. You're definitely running into a situation where you're going to be dating a joke of a dude, but at the same point in time, you know, if they're actually working on that, like, you can't just avoid these people forever, and there's a chance that this is a norm.
Did he get a diploma?
Yeah.
Believe it or not, you guys laugh about this, but this is a normal thing. Like, this is not as abnormal as you're thinking it is.
To use a hamper?
No, if I take 50 dudes my age right now, and I were to question the single dudes or the guys that are in a relationship but aren't married, if I were to question how many of them actually either have a hamper or do their dishes every night, you would be astonished how never done that.
No, it's not so much whether they do it. It's whether they can put two rocks together and be like, you know what, I could do some bucket of some sort to hold this until I put it into the washer.
Yeah.
Okay, that I agree with. Okay.
I mean, what kind of dude gets completely buff naked in his room and goes, well, man, I'm out of ideas. This is all the farther I thought into it. Look at this place, it's a mess.
Some confused and naked man like, yeah.
I mean, generally,
I guess I really don't know what to do now.
I know where them clothes are going before I take them off. You know what I'm saying? Like, I got a pretty good idea where they're heading for. I don't just get bare naked and go, oh, man, I'm tapped. This is the best I have.
I don't deal with problems I don't got. until I'm nude, I don't have a problem.
All right, one more. Ready?
Yep.
Dear Life from the Past, two teenage boys who live on our block frequently ride their skateboards in the street. They wear no protective padding or helmets and pay no attention to their surroundings. They stay out all hours in the summer, come flying into the street, and swerve over both lanes of traffic. I've seen cars narrowly avoid hitting them many times, and I hear cars honking at them and drivers shouting. Their parents don't seem to care. They also let their dogs run loose around the neighborhood and into the street. I often back out of their driveway without looking. I know I'll get nowhere speaking to them. I'm terrified I'll hit one of the boys with my car. I have come close twice and got dirty looks from them both times. I warn my visitors to watch out for them. I'm afraid it's only a matter of time before something awful happens, and I don't want to go to jail or live with a lifetime of guilt because of their irresponsible behavior. Any ideas? Yes, stop being a crotchety old woman.
You are an angry old curmudgeon. Right? That's exactly what you are right now. Oh, you boys on your skateboards. Look, that's Henry, you. There goes the youth. I'm imagining the conversation. All right, Myrtle, you coming over for lunch the other 2 days from now? Yeah, sweetheart. Hey, watch out for them old boys. They're going to be swerving through traffic on their skateboards and dogs running around. Just a heads up.
It does. It's a total picture of Armageddon on her block. Like, you drive up to it, it's picture perfect. Drive up, all of a sudden you hit her block, it's nothing but dogs and kids and boards. Tooting around everywhere, throwing Monster Energy drinks at each other.
You kids with your candy cigarettes, I'm sick of you.
Using words like butt and crap.
This neighborhood is never the same.
Yeah, listen, I mean, realistically, I don't know what you think you're going to do.
There's no winning.
Welcome to the 2010s.
I mean, this is like you're painting a caricature of a child. You know, I mean, like everyone can envision some flannel-wearing Nirvana shirt with a stocking hat on when it's 95 degrees out, boarding his way down the street going, hey, old man. You know? Short of that, I mean, you could trip him or something. I mean, I don't know what you're going to do.
Here's the deal. Hit him with your car one time. One time. They will never do it again.
Hold on. Practical thing. You could park your car over your own sidewalk.
No, true.
That makes him less likely to come cruising. Eventually, he'll just start going around you.
Well, and here's the deal. Give him 2 or 3 years. I don't know how old he is. Pretty soon, he's going to be driving cars really fast up and down the road, too.
Then you can call the
And then they'll be gone.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to be long. They're just going to be gone.
It's just kid behavior.
I know plenty of, like, 22, 23-year-old dudes that will still skateboard.
Boova, do you feel like you should up the amount of people you hang out with? Because every
dude you hang out with doesn't know how
to do laundry and drives a skateboard.
I do not hang out with anybody who skateboards in the road. Like, I just know they exist.
Now, I have more trouble with ladies in strollers tooting around the middle of the road like they own the place than I do with punk kids
jazzercising
on skateboards.
With their kids?
Yeah, they're like walk three ladies wide with everybody got a stroller and kids on leashes, and they're like, toot-toot-toot. They're just rolling, and then I go to back up, and they give me this sneery look like I had crossed into their territory known as the public road. And, like, I have way more problems with grown ladies and kids than with punk kids on skateboards.
That's true. That happens in my neighborhood, too. You got
That's where it happened last time. It was on your street.
Yeah. Couple ladies astride, and they look at you, and they're like, don't look at me this way. I'm a mom. I'm like, if you were a mom, you wouldn't put your kid in the middle of the road.
Yeah. You know what a kid in a skateboard is? Smoking weed in the basement. He ain't causing nobody any harm at all. So anybody have any practical advice for the man or lady? I don't know who it is. It doesn't say whether it's a dude or a lady.
Dan?
There's nothing you can do. Yeah. Try not to let it bother you. Try not to hit the kids. That'd be great.
Maybe you should hand them
a gospel
tract. Is there
a different direction?
Yeah, here's
that?
You can hand them some gospel tracts on their way by.
Can you give them a class on how to use a hamper?
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the thing. Her over dramatics on, I'm afraid I'm going to end up in jail.
Right.
Here's the thing. What kind of stealth meister is this character okay. that you're backing out and all of a sudden he's just there?
Here's the answer right here. You get yourself some bags of pea gravel. And every time you go down the street, you throw out a couple handfuls. They're going to stop skating there.
You want to send these kids flying off their skateboards.
I'm not so much against what Dan's saying.
They'll be discouraged after a while.
Yes.
Especially
Let's
the
discourage
old lady.
The youth from being kids. That's the best way to do it. Keep the children down.
Just during the wherever you don't want them.
There's something
Which
very
sounds
cool.
like everywhere. If it's road, she or he does not want them there.
It uses pea gravel like rodent repellent, except for urban hipsters. Wherever you don't want an urban hipster, just drop
a little pea gravel.
Where do you guys keep the kid be gone? I thought you were going to say something like quicklime or something. Something implied that like shoveling quicklime and just have it sitting out like, I might use this.
I started setting out homework and rocks, and all of a sudden, kids were nowhere to be found. I put a piece of paper with responsibility written on it, and they vanished.
Engelbert Humperdinck, it just keeps them away. I blasted out the front door; they never show up.
These old people crack. I mean, I can think of 100 ways in which it would be fun to attempt to dissuade them, like dress like them for a while and stand out, and always be yelling stuff like. Rock on, dudes.
You should take up skateboarding and flannels and beanies. Become one of them. Try and join their skateboard troupe.
Can I join your gang?
I'm just imagining this urban warfare where this, like, old lady is trying to figure out how to, like, connect with the youth, and then they stop showing up.
Yeah, there's plenty of ways to creep them out.
Yeah.
Like, frankly, that's a little bit of a turn the other cheek, right? Just give them the old, a little bit more than they were asking for, and it weirds them out.
What?
What do you mean?
Mike and I just both gave each other the weirdest look. Give them more than one.
Yeah.
I'm so creeped out by the possibilities of that statement from an old woman or an old man.
Here we go. Moving on.
So anyway.
I'm still sticking with Dan's kamikaze laissez-faire pea gravel. like you out there at 2 in the morning going, hey.
You see him trip like, score 1-0.
Now they wear padding.
You could keep a scoreboard on your house, like with the old school flip numbers and stuff where you take them off.
It says old lady and punks.
Old lady one. Here we go. Secular says, regardless of whether you think it will get you anywhere, talk to the parents about how dangerous their teenager's behavior is.
Yeah.
And when you do, explain that there may have been a couple of near misses. After that, if the boys continue to ride in the street, mention it to your local police department, and perhaps the boys will be cited for their recklessness. Some communities have ordinances requiring the use of helmets. If the dogs create a nuisance, contact animal control. After that, que sera sera, and your conscience should be clear. So Secular's advice is pretty much just call the authorities,
the government,
get them in trouble.
Take care of it.
Be the worst possible neighbor you can be in this situation.
Why don't you just fit the stereotype of a curmudgeon old person, sit inside your house, and call the law?
I'm going to call the law.
Classic. This is why we have a hard time loving each other anymore. You know what I'm saying?
The cops show up. What's all with this pea gravel doing out here?
Yeah. That's littering, man. You're going to have to clean all that stuff up.
Yeah, but we need a street sweeper or something. This is getting ridiculous.
But the dogs were always bothering with my ficus.
Yeah.
They come sniff it. They come sniff it all the time. They want to lift their leg. They don't, but they want to.
Okay. That's it. all right, yeah, all right. You've been listening to Live from the Path. I don't know. I hope we solved your problems in life. I feel like this is covered just about everybody, really. Oh man, this is a real bug that worked out right at the end of a tune.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. Bad. There we go. Bad radio.
I can't help what goes on. All right. Anyway, check us out during the week. Go to livefromthepath.org. You can find past clips from the show, interviews. Hey, Wayne Stewart's book is out tomorrow. You still have a chance to pre-order. Go to Amazon.com. Do a search for Wayne Stewart, and you want to pick up When Totems Fall. I finished it yesterday and delivered on its promise. Very solid book by Wayne, and you can go hook up with that on Amazon. And then you get the paper copies, I think, from his website. Just go like When Totems Fall out on the Facebook, and he'll post updates and stuff there. Let's see. There were Connection Music Festival went great. We talked about that. But you can remember that CD from Arendelle's out there. Make sure to follow Tessa Johnson on Facebook. We just had a lot of cool artists, and we got more coming up. Hey, Light 45 is going to be in next month. They were at Bash. Mike didn't get there in time, but like those guys are awesome.
Go check out their one of their songs on their EP on iTunes is called Steeped, and it's an excellent tune. So you're looking for Steeped by Light 45. Go check that out this week.
Yeah, they're going to be in studio, I think, July 11th. They're going to be here, and so we'll have them in then. And let's see, Tompkins coming in.
Yeah.
King MC's gonna, or not King MC.
Bending Hope.
Yeah, Bending Hope's going to be here. Yeah, so lots of folks coming in. And that's it. I think that's all. If you need some advice, shoot us an email at info@livefromthepath.org. In the meantime, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.